Nobody wants to be anxious or depressed. Nobody says, I'm going to just wake up and have a pit in my stomach and feel worried all day. Nobody chooses that. These are pop-up windows that happen in our minds. One of the biggest contributors to pain and anguish and certainly depression is thinking that it won't pass.
Psychotherapist Andrea Vactor.
But to think back on any thought you've ever had, it isn't still here. It didn't last forever since you had it. Any feeling or sensation, even if it's really hard and even if it's really ongoing, it does pass at certain times and certainly will pass. Emotions, feelings need empathy. They need to be welcomed and honored and tended to. Our thoughts need to be challenged. Our thoughts are not always helpful. They're not always true. They can feel so real that they can cause stress hormones in our bodies. They can cause anguish. They can cause unhealthy behaviors to try to quiet them or get rid of them.
What advice would you have for someone whose mind is perpetually filled with worries?
So if the thoughts are perpetually unhelpful, negative, unkind, we can...
Hello there, friends. Welcome once again to the Happy Habit Podcast. I'm Matthew, if we've not met before. I'm here every Monday and Thursday talking health and well-being. And if you're new to the podcast and are getting any benefit whatsoever from tuning in, well then please like, subscribe, share with other people who you think might also get some benefit. And do leave the podcast a positive rating if you have acquired some knowledge and some learning throughout the course of this podcast series. You can leave me 3, 4, or even 5 stars if you think that I have earned it. A reminder too, we're on Instagram and on YouTube, where we're also seeing an increase in subscribers there, which is great to see. Just look for the Happy Habit Podcast. Today I'm talking with Andrea Vactor, who is a psychotherapist and author. Having struggled with her own mental health issues, she is perfectly placed to help those people presenting with anxiety, depression, and other mental health concerns, and she has been doing so for the last 30 years. In this episode, I ask Andrea about the difference between thoughts and feelings and why awareness of this difference is important in our own mental health journey. We talk about how to deal with worries and negative thoughts, discover the roles of self-compassion and self-awareness when it comes to optimizing one's own relationship with oneself, expect to hear how anxiety can have a physical manifestation in our bodies. We also hear how best to interact with people in our lives who are struggling with anxiety. We learn about the importance of meditation in giving us control over our thoughts and emotions and our relationship with both. Plus, Andrea talks about some simple mental health strategies she refers to as her toolkit, which can be deployed in times of anxiety, low mood, and worry. Thank you, first of all, Andrea, for coming onto the podcast today. You are a psychotherapist, you're an author, you're a teacher. And I believed, though, you struggled with depression yourself. And what I'm really interested to hear, just at the outset of this conversation, is how that struggle informed and influenced your work today as a psychotherapist, dealing with people who present with anxiety, stress, and depression, and all of those other things that people present with.
Massively informed. First of all, I really understand when people come to me where they're coming from. I really get it. And I've had over the years, 30 plus years in private practice, of people saying to me, it really feels like you understand. You've really been there, whether they're struggling with anxiety, depression, an eating disorder, addiction. I've run the gamut, unfortunately, and fortunately, because I got a career out of it. So I really feel like I understand my clients and students deeply. And I also feel like I know what I needed in order to heal. And so I know that there's a broad spectrum of what people need. And it's not just necessarily going to be a few suggestions. We all need different things at different times. So I feel like my experience both helps me offer people as much as I can the things that I have found helpful, and also helps me really understand where people are coming from.
So you have acquired the empathy the hard way.
I have. I definitely have been in the dungeon of emotional pain and mental anguish and addictive behaviors and all of that. So yeah, I don't come to this lightly or with a lab coat on. I really have been there.
On your website, one of your blog posts simply states, storms pass, feelings pass, and situations pass. How does being aware of this make a difference and help?
Well, I think one of the biggest contributors to pain and anguish and certainly depression is thinking that it won't pass and having this sort of dark cloud thought going that it will never pass. It's always been like this. It'll never get better. And so really remembering that it will pass. Now, for some people and for some chapters in life, it does feel like it's pretty persistent and it can last for a long time. So it can add to that fear and hopelessness. But to think back on any thought you've ever had, it isn't still here. It didn't last forever since you had it. Any feeling or sensation, even if it's really hard and even if it's really ongoing, it does pass at certain times and certainly will pass in the future. So I think it helps to give us hope that if we're in a low spot or a pit, it will not be forever. And we do have tools to help us out.
Can we talk about the interplay between thoughts and feelings, how they are distinct and how not being aware that they are distinct and different from each other can exacerbate whatever you may be going through?
Yes, I actually talk about this a lot with people. Feelings need emotions. Feelings need empathy. They need to be welcomed and honored and tended to. Our thoughts need to be challenged. Our thoughts are not always helpful. They're not always true. And they're maybe trying to help, but our thoughts need to be challenged. They're not always the truth. If my thought is that I see you right now, that's true. I see a plant behind you. That's a true thought. But feelings are, but most thoughts are, many thoughts, especially if we're anxious or depressed, they're not helpful. They're not true. I'm not okay. I'll never be okay. No one will ever love me. I can't do anything right. This will always last. This will never pass. Oh, that rhymed. Those need to be challenged. Those need to be questioned. And it's oftentimes our thoughts, our unhelpful, unkind thoughts that cause our feelings. So it's important to distinguish between, I'm sad. That's just an honest emotion that needs to be tended to, versus my thoughts are causing me to feel sad, and those need to be questioned.
I love that quote. I think it's a quote anyway, thoughts are not facts.
Right. Right.
It's so pithy, it's so simple. Exactly. It's so pithy, it's so simple. But as you say, although they can feel like they're real, but they definitely aren't.
Right. Well, we can't take a thought and look at it or pull it out of our heads and show it to someone or put it in our pocket or the drawer. They can feel so real that they can cause stress hormones in our bodies. They can cause anguish. They can cause unhealthy behaviors to try to quiet them or get rid of them, or to believe them, but they're not real. It's kind of fascinating if it wasn't so painful.
I don't know if you're familiar with Sam Harris. He makes the point that if you can observe your thoughts, well, then that's proof then that your thoughts are not you.
Exactly.
If that makes sense, yeah.
If we can be aware of them or aware of physical sensations, then there's awareness and then there's the sensation or the thought. So yes, separating it out is really helpful.
What advice would you have for someone whose mind is perpetually filled with worries, and how can we quieten down the noise associated with those worries in our mind?
Oh, the many ways. I love having a toolkit. That's why I call my courses toolkits, and I have lots of blogs with different tools, because it's kind of like, I think of it like our thoughts, if they're unhealthy or unhelpful or unkind, are like a child. And our compassionate heart and our wise mind are like the parent that is going to look in this bag that they carry for the child and say, let's try this, sweetheart. You know, let's try this, buddy. So if the thoughts are perpetually unhelpful, negative, unkind, we can, tune inside and see what tool might feel helpful. It could be questioning that thought, saying, Byron Katie has a really helpful, profound process called the work. So questioning that thought, is it true? Do I know with 100% certainty that that thought is true? And work questioning it like you would question if somebody came to you and they said, I think I'm a loser. I mean, you wouldn't believe them, probably, hopefully. You would help them question that. Sometimes we need to soothe ourselves and comfort ourselves and offer ourselves compassion like we would to a child or a dear friend or just even a pet. I mean, sometimes people treat their pets with so much more compassion and tenderness than they do their own feelings and thoughts. So we can tune inside and turn to like a physical hands-on tool, like self-havening. I'm doing it right now. You can't see if you're listening, but self-havening is, a way of with your own soothing touch, soothing yourself. There's the three areas, your upper arms, your face, and your hands. We can do a turnaround thought, like I know affirmations can have a bad rap because they can feel really cheesy and untrue and unhelpful. But I think if we can find a thought that feels true in some way or possible in some way, I was working with a client who was so filled with self-hatred, and we were talking about what might be a thought that she could tell herself that would feel possibly less bad, if not good. And she's like, I'm not going to do some corny affirmation that I don't believe, like I love myself. I think, well, no, self-hate to self-love is just an unrealistic leap. But is there something kind you could say about yourself? And she said, well, I'm good to my dog. And I said, well, does that feel better than I'm a loser and I'm worth nothing and I hate myself? And yeah, that feels a little softer. So playing with the thought and seeing if there's some softer way we can speak to ourselves or kinder way.
And then when it comes to nocturnal rumination, we can get through our days because of the busyness of our lives without incident. But then when our head hits the pillow at nighttime, our minds start to turn over. It affects our sleep, which then leads to disruptive sleep and tiredness. It's a vicious cycle. So how do we deal then with the worries at nighttime?
Well, similarly, in terms of taking care of that mind like you would soothe a child. If a child came into your bed and said, I can't sleep and I'm having nightmares or I can't stop thinking, I would hope and assume most people wouldn't yell at the child. Most people wouldn't say, well, then just get on a screen all night or just stay up and think, let's think worse things. Let's make it worse. I think you would soothe them. So partly one tool could be bringing yourself back to present moment, bringing yourself back to the feeling of the mattress and the feeling of the blanket and the feeling of your body breathing. Like you mentioned earlier, being aware of the thoughts and sensations, coming back to present moment conscious awareness so that you're not lost in it. Listening to a mindfulness or a sleep meditation. I like to, in one of my sleep meditations, I like to talk about decreasing the pressure to sleep and increasing the idea and the goal of rest. Because if we say, I can't fall asleep, I'm going to be so tired tomorrow. Oh no, it's another hour. I got to get to sleep. That doesn't help us sleep. But if we say, what could I do to just give myself some rest? Listen to a meditation, count my breaths, listen to some soft music, repeat a mantra or a calming phrase. What can I do to have the goal of rest? And that can really make a difference.
I've been talking to a lot of experts lately about the subject of anxiety and what it is and how it manifests itself in our minds and bodies. How would you characterize anxiety?
Well, oftentimes it's our thoughts are unhelpful and the mind is going off into future scenarios that are unhelpful, unpleasant, based on probably painful things that have happened in the past. causing physical sensations in the body that are really, really unpleasant, whether that's a pit in the stomach or racing heart or, you know, brain fog. But sometimes people have anxious sensations and there aren't thoughts attached to them. It could be something physical is going on, but then we have anxious thoughts about those physical sensations. So I would say that most of the time there's anxious thoughts that lead to anxious physical sensations, but sometimes there's anxious physical sensations. And rather than just noticing it like a storm, like you would look at a rainstorm or you would look at fireworks, just noticing it with a little separation, we then have anxious thoughts about the anxious physical sensations. Uh-oh, this feels horrible. What if this happens all night? What if this happens at work? What if this gets worse? So I would describe it as anxious, worrisome, repetitive, unhelpful, negative thought patterns that often lead to anxious physical sensations, or anxious physical sensations that we then have negative, hopeless, terrified thoughts about. Hope that made sense.
Oh, absolutely. One feeding into the other. You already mentioned your use of toolkits in your therapy. Can we talk about your anxiety relief toolkit? When would you deploy that? Would that be a preemptive thing, or would you use that in the middle of a bout of anxiety as such?
Well, both. I mean, I have two anxiety relief courses and lots of free anxiety relief meditations. And I think in order to know how to use a tool, we need to learn it and practice it. And so we need to practice it enough so that when anxiety fires up and we can't necessarily think as clearly as when we're calm, we already have the tools available. We already know what they are. We've already have them written down. We already have practiced them. So it can definitely help to listen if you struggle with anxiety, to listen, preferably when you're not in the middle of panic or anxiety, but it's okay if you are, you can still listen and gather a list as you go through. As I said, I have the two classes only because after I finished one, I thought, oh, I should have put that in and oh, I left that out. So I just made a second one. So I have two anxiety relief courses. And as you go through, I encourage students to formulate a toolkit, a list, and practice them so that when anxiety flares up, they can turn to their favorite tools. And if someone is in the middle of anxiety, feeling anxiety in their body, filled with anxious thoughts, they can still listen because hopefully the lessons will be soothing and they can practice along as I guide them.
You mentioned earlier that you've been working in this field for all of three decades, if not a little bit more than that. And at that stage, the internet was in its infancy. Today, we have access to the internet at the touch of a button that we carried around in our pockets and handbags all the time. I know you're a proponent of conscious and balanced screen use, and I just want to get your thoughts on this because in recent weeks, my own use of the internet has been very curated on purpose because there's just so much bad news out there, and I've stepped away from using Twitter and stepped away from reading news headlines. So can you talk to me about the value of a conscious and balanced screen use and then how we do that then on a day-to-day basis?
Yes, and it's tricky because we can turn to a screen to actually help us with anxiety, to listen to a meditation or a soothing podcast or a course, but then these screens can actually cause anxiety, and they often do. So we really need to make sure that we're using our screens rather than feeling used by them. I talk about the difference between a time killer and a spirit filler. So using your tools in ways that feed you, that make you feel better, and rather than scrolling, and all of a sudden hours have gone by, you haven't eaten, you haven't had fresh air, your mind is zinging. So it's really, really important, especially for people that struggle with anxiety and depression, to be aware of their screen use. I have a blog with lots of different tips, like small, manageable ones, to just try to integrate in, whether that's turning it off for a few minutes or taking a little walk without the screen or on airplane mode, but being really aware that the very thing we're doing that it can be helping us with anxiety can also shift or it be used in ways that contribute to anxiety and depression.
Are you seeing the insidiousness of the negative effects of the internet creeping more and more into your sessions with your therapy clients today over and above, let's say, 10 or 15 years ago, for example?
Absolutely. When I first started, I specialized in eating disorders because I think that was the thing that really robbed me of the most peace in my earlier years was the eating disorder. So that naturally became my specialty. And for, I would say, 2 decades, I really only saw adults and like young adults and teens. And then all of a sudden, as the internet came on the scene, I started getting calls from parents with 6-year-old kids who had eating disorders, 7-year-olds who were obsessed with their abs and six-pack abs and wouldn't go to school because they hated their body size and on diets at 6 years old. And so it has just massively affected people. And again, even using it, you know, there's so much goodness in the screens. We can talk to each other across the world and we can listen to incredible things and find information, you know, in a click. And they can really take us down and make our nervous system so overstimulated that it's almost like we're on, not even almost, but like we're on drugs, even if we're not using drugs. So it's so important to be conscious of it. And yes, I have seen such an incredible impact, not in a positive way, from the onset of social media and screens, yeah, in my practice and with my students.
You have been an author for the well-known website Psychology Today. It's a terrific website. And among many of your articles, you wrote an article about early morning anxiety. Now, this is something I think everybody can relate to. How can we combat that? And I suppose, before you answer that part, why do we feel anxious first thing in the morning anyway?
Well, there tends to be a rise in cortisol, just like, you know, biologically, that can happen. And some people have it worse than others. And similar to the nighttime, it's, you know, how can we treat ourselves with kindness, with tenderness? I know when there's a fight or flight inside the system, it's kind of like a takeover, like it feels like the whole system has been taken over. It's hard to think clearly. It's so uncomfortable. It's hard to tend to it when it feels like we are it. So I liken it again to a parent, a conscious, loving parent taking care of a child. And if the anxiety and the sensations are like our child, rather than hating it, yelling at it, judging it, telling it to get away, how can we tend to it? Whether that means we put our hand on the body part that feels anxious, whether we deepen our breath and we imagine our breathing, just soothing those sensations. We look at how we're treating our body with hydration and nutrition and the thoughts we're putting in, oh my God, this is going to last all day, versus, okay, I notice sensations inside. They're just sensations. I'm going to treat myself kindly, I'm going to take care of my body. I'm not going to believe every thought that pops up right now. What can I do? Would it be better for me to hop on a screen and start scrolling? Or would it be better for me to listen to a meditation on airplane mode? Would it be better for me to do some deep breathing? Or would it be better for me to take a walk in nature or drink some water and have a nice nutritious breakfast or listen to a soothing podcast? So to really imagine that the sensations are like your child and you're going to treat them and your body like a loving, kind, conscious parent would.
We've been talking about self-care here, but obviously we don't live in isolation. We live very often with other people and we are in relationships. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on how can we deal with anxiety such that it doesn't negatively impact in our relationships? And if, for example, we're in a relationship with somebody who experiences anxiety, how do we interact with that person such that we help them rather than hinder their progress or their healing?
Yes. And also, how do we carve time out, right? If we're living with a family and taking care of other people or have the house filled, how do we carve out time? I recently had someone she's in one of my courses, and she said, I just don't have the time to listen in the morning. And I feel like, you know, I wake up and there's the kids and there's the dog and there's the job. And, you know, when am I going to listen? And I said, well, does the morning have to be the only time to listen? And she said, well, I thought that's just kind of when you're supposed to do things. Like first thing in the morning, you listen to a meditation. I said, well, it doesn't have to be, you know, do you get a lunch break or how about in the evening? Or this is my overeating course. I said, when do you mostly overeat or binge eat? And she said, at night when I'm sitting on the couch with my family. And I said, do you think your family would be supportive if you said, I'm just going to take 10 minutes and go into the bedroom and listen to a lesson? And she said, they would totally be supportive. So getting creative with when you do it. I think if you're struggling with anxiety, letting your family know what you most need and want from them in a really respectful way. If someone else is struggling, doing your best to be empathic and understanding and encourage them to use the tools that they have said are helpful, perhaps, or encouraging them to find some tools that might be helpful. So just really compassionately, nobody wants to be anxious or depressed. Nobody says, I'm going to just wake up and have a pit in my stomach and feel worried all day. Nobody chooses that. These are pop-up windows that happen in our minds. There are stress hormones coursing through our bodies. We don't want that. So treating it in a way that assumes that it's not your fault or it's not your family member's fault or choice. So really compassionately, I think, working with your family and helping people and encouraging yourself and your family members to carve out some moments to go fill back up and to listen to something or do something that could be calming.
You've been very critical of society's perfectionism. Can you talk to me about how this is negatively affecting people and giving them a cause to go and see people like yourself?
Well, there's been an enormous amount of perfectionism and is still with appearance, and not only appearance, but productivity. And I think it's so easy and seductive to assume that the person you're seeing is happy and has everything that you think they have because they look the way they look. And it wasn't until I started my private practice and having these people walk into my office that look like they would be so happy and look like the, you know, the what society deems a perfect person would look like, and they're tortured. And probably the more, quote, beautiful someone is, the more tortured, because the more pressure to stay that way or look that way. And there's also this pressure to be perfect, not just look perfect. It's like we've just been given this happily ever after paradigm that is really the biggest lie. I remember hearing once, I tried to find out who said it because it was so powerful. The 7 most damaging words on the planet are, and they've all lived happily ever after. Because we've just been sold this race, and the people at the head of the race are, you know, look the best and look the youngest and get the most done and have the most money. And to me, the people that are living the most peacefully and have the most balance and treat themselves the kindest, that's who I would want to be. And that's who I subscribe to be, not to look a certain way or get a certain amount done, but to have the most peace inside, the most moments of peace. So to me, that the race that we're given, and everybody's looking at these images and scrolling and thinking that these people are happy and peaceful and have their dreams come true. And this is why people, you know, we see stars who are the richest, most famous people on the planet, addicted, depressed, anxious, committing suicide. And so to really question that, to question that the person I'm looking at that I think I should look like, first of all, I don't even know if they actually look like that naturally. They probably don't. And I don't even know how they are inside and would I even want to be inside them.
I have to direct people to your website. There are some terrific meditations, guided meditations on there, between 15 and 30 minutes long. You can also find them on your YouTube channel also. Can you talk to me about the role that meditation can play when it comes to managing anxiety, stress, or indeed low mood?
Well, I certainly can. And I can also say that meditation isn't for everyone at every time, because sometimes if we are so anxious, we can't just sit down and do a meditation. We close our eyes, and that's the like worst company we want to be in, is ourselves with our eyes closed. So that's why I like to have the toolkit with all these different options of tools. But meditation is, it's just proven to calm the nervous system. And there's so many different types of meditation now, from pure conscious awareness to present moment mindfulness to yoga nidra to chanting mantras, you know, to, I like to do a variety of guided meditations to see, you know, what would be like a menu, you know, what am I hungry for right now? What feels like it might be soothing right now? So I think meditation can be profoundly helpful. And again, I think it really helps to have a variety of tools if you don't feel like you can actually close your eyes and meditate.
Well, I can certainly recommend the meditations, having listened to some of them. You've got the perfect voice for it as well. It's nice and soothing and calming. And as I said, I love the fact that they're guided, because I think you do need that little bit of instruction just to corral you in the right direction.
Yes, corral that mind.
If people want to check out about your meditations or your courses or indeed your toolkits, where can they go to find out more?
Well, everything is on my website, but on my website, it kind of leads you other places, because I don't sell anything myself. But Insight Timer, which is a very popular meditation app, that's where my classes are. And in order to take any courses on Insight Timer, you have to have a subscription. And I think it's really reasonable. I think it's like $5 or $6 a month. I don't think it's a lot. And I think you can even get a trial. So that's where my courses are. And then my meditations are all on Insight Timer. They're on Aura. They're on YouTube. And those are all free. So I really feel passionate about trying to offer free resources as much as possible. And I, you know, whether it's sleep, insomnia, anxiety, depression, struggles with overeating or binge eating, self-talk, I try to really run the gamut. And so Insight Timer has everything. And my website has everything that will lead people to how to access them.
Well, what I will do is I will pop a link to your website and to those other links also, so that people can do their own research and check out those courses and toolkits and guided meditations that I spoke about as well. But for the moment, thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Happy Habit Podcast. And if you've not already done so, please do like, subscribe and share with friends and family, people who you think might get some benefit from tuning in. And if you're enjoying listening, please leave the podcast a positive rating. Until next time, stay happy.